Everybody, and welcome to another episode of Turnchuckle. We're back after like months away. I was in parts unknown for a bit. Have you ever, WWE.com don't do this anymore, but they, when you typed in an invalid URL on WWE.com, it took you to a picture of parts unknown, and it was like this, it was like this desert with like Papa Shango and Ultimate Warrior and, you know, Repo Man or whoever just stood about, just like being daft lads, you know.
Big daft lads.
So I am Pablo, and you are Foxy, apparently.
How are you doing?
I'm fine. Well, I'm going insane. You know, well, no, I'm not going insane. Well, on day whatever of Coronageddon. Fun and games. So you know, if nothing else, it's giving me a kick up the bum to actually do more podcasts again and get these interviews, these really good interviews, I've got to say, like, you know, into your ears, and you know, also do the interviews that I've got lined up as well, which I'm very excited about. And I know that you've been keeping busy as well with lots of Grapple Arcade and BBG stuff. Would you like to tell everyone what's been going on?
Yeah, well, I mean, everybody's been a victim of this bloody coronavirus, from worst case scenarios, unfortunately, to even more simplistic things such as events being cancelled and stuff like that. So whilst, you know, it's such a minor concept that events are getting cancelled compared to what's really going on with this nonsense, it's one of those things where, at the very least, we're able to kind of reschedule for later on down the year. So there's been a lot of sort of bits and bobs that we were going to be part of that we'll be doing a bit later on in the year, such as For the Love of Wrestling has now been rescheduled for the last weekend in October, start of November, which should be great. We'll be getting Jason on from For the Love of Wrestling for another chat again quite soon, actually, to talk about the ins and outs of what's been happening and what's going to be happening going forward with that. Our friends at Hooked on Wrestling as well, who we do all the pay-per-view parties with in different venues around the country. We're obviously going to be doing the WrestleMania one, but that's not happening now because of gatherings, etc., etc. So we're going to be doing some other bits and bobs with them behind the scenes, and everybody should be will be made aware of that quite soon. But apart from that, me and yourself have been starting up a new playlist and a new concept, haven't we, with our Nation of Isolation playlist.
Yeah, we're just picking the subject, basically, and talking about it, which we do at great length anyway when we talk to each other, so thought we'd actually put it on tape. For everyone to listen to. So episode one, we actually, it makes sense, we talk about the Nation of Domination, and we try to, you know, have it from our perspective a little bit, because it would be very easy just to read everything off Wikipedia and stuff, but not every, you'd be surprised what isn't on Wikipedia. You know,
a lot of stuff that we discussed, a lot of the stuff to do with Nation especially, it's not everything is online. It's one of those things where it's available, you can go and watch stuff, don't get me wrong, but it's one of those groups, in my opinion, that any timeline that's out there usually miss a vast proportion of its early incarnation, I think it's fair to say.
And
I think we've tried to cover that.
And we also talk about like what we thought of it and stuff like that. And hopefully that is of interest to you. You may agree, you may disagree. You know, we'd love to hear from you, actually.
Give us suggestions as well, because I think we're going to be picking. We've got a lot of different sort of subject matters that we want to be talking about as part of Nation of Isolation, and you know, whether it's different factions.
Sorry, just that name cracks me up every time.
I mean, you know, it made sense to cover Nation of Domination as the first one. We've got a couple of different ideas of factions, for example, that we want to cover. A couple of other special related subjects as well to do with wrestling and events that have happened in the past that we want to cover in detail, of our experiences of whether being at them, watching them, or just our general knowledge of those particular events and subject areas as well. But yeah, by all means, get in touch with some ideas that you'd like to see covered, especially if you think it's stuff that hasn't been covered before, or things that you think have been covered but not in depth, and we'll do our best to get that to you, because I'd like to think that, you know, we can our together knowledgeness can span a fair chunk of wrestling. And
But what happens is, when you know too much about wrestling, you start making up words like knowledgeness.
It made knowledgeable and nonsense in one.
Knowledgeous. So, yeah, today's show is part one of an interview with Sam Houston. A lot of fun to talk to you. And the song is a part of the show as well. Recorded an original song, basically. And he's got a real, you know, depending on your taste and stuff like that, he's got a real country gravel to his vocals. Like, you know, you wouldn't have thought that he would, like, go out there and try and sing. But, like, I guess the...
You'd never guess he'd have a country sort of element to him, considering he wore chaps and a cowboy hat, would you?
Shut up. No, I mean... No, but I mean, in terms of, like, you wouldn't think he'd actually sing, you know what I mean? But again, his sister, Rockin' Robin, sang at WrestleMania 5, and that was what it was, you know?
Grizzly Smith was obviously on American Idol.
Well, did you ever see, I don't know if you ever saw the live version of WrestleMania 5, like, live version of it, because Rock and Robin,
I think I was one.
Rock and Robin does the national anthem, and it's, you know, I think she, you know, it was what it was. Jesse Ventura immediately was like, well, she should stick to her day job. But the thing is, they played the tape, the backing tape for her singing it, and she can't hear it the first time round, so, like, she just doesn't sing. Then they have to start the tape again, and it's like, I'm sure if Rock and Robin could have just been swallowed into the ring at that point, she gladly would have. But
Reba McIntyre's version was better.
Reba McIntyre, it was
Reba,
Tito's sister, She didn't need a backing track, you know. Rock and Robin, you know, she was women's champion and didn't have a match at WrestleMania 5. I think that just says it all, doesn't it? Like, about what WWF thought of the women's division at that point. But
after WrestleMania 1, the next women's match was Alundra Blaze versus Leilani Kai, wasn't it? Like, isn't that right? I'm sure it is. There's, like, sort of, like, 13 WrestleManias between.
On pay per view?
WrestleManias,
Moolah took on... All right, we're going off subject now, but Moolah took on Velvet McIntyre at WrestleMania 2. Yes, but... And I completely forgot about this, or only just found this out, because I don't remember ever hearing it, but do you know how Moolah was with Harley Race at WrestleMania 3?
Yeah,
brought the crowd down to the ring. Do you know who was originally meant to be doing that? You'll never guess.
Pat Butcher.
Not completely out of the right lines, to be honest. Samantha Fox.
Oh, right, okay.
And for whatever reason, that didn't happen. But we're going well off topic here. But so Sam Houston.
It's an interesting substitution, isn't it? Sam Fox, we can't get her. Who's another woman? That's pretty much what they did.
They did promos and everything. Bobby Heenan was like, oh, Samantha Fox will be, because she had a hit in America. It was used on Clerks 2 for the Donkey Show and stuff like that. I don't know if Sam Houston will be happy me talking about Donkey Shows on his but he has some wild stories. But did you know that Sam Houston, before we get into the interview, Ted DiBiase in 87, right before he became a $1 million man, came back as a babyface and teamed up with Sam Houston. And then he turned on Sam Houston in a match in Houston, Texas. It was a match against One Man Gang and Ron Bass. And DiBiase turned on Sam Houston. And then it led to the $1 million man. And not a lot of people remember that.
I know that Sam Houston was married to Baby Doll, wasn't he?
Sam Houston was married to Baby Doll. We don't.
It was incidentally interesting, and she was trained by Jake Roberts.
Did not know that. That's interesting. We go into Sam's career, and he's got some wild stories. Like, I was like, ooh, do I bring up his ex-wife?
I can imagine, yeah.
So, So, like, you know, we don't really... he maybe brings her up once or twice, but it's not something that we're going depth
on.
No,
of course not. No, no. That's
you know, I always like to focus on the career over the personal life. And there are interviews probably covering that stuff anyway, but that's
yeah,
not
yeah. where I thought about, it was quite interesting, obviously, with him being, what, brother-in-laws or whatever with Jake, that Jake trained her. That's quite interesting. But there you go.
That's very interesting. Right, well, without further ado, this is our interview, part one. Part two coming next week with Sam Houston.
I remember that night I could never forget. Pulling a drag off my cigarette, I heard voices talking to me. I looked around but I couldn't see, and the lightning flashed across the sky. The thunder rumbled and rolled on by. I saw the fear in the devil's eyes that night, 'cause the Son of the Lord had come to save me. His life on a cross is what he gave me, offering salvation for my sins. Later that night in the pouring rain, I took to my knees, I started praying. My mind was filled with fright, my heart with pain. And Jesus came into my heart, he washed my sins for a brand new start. I was baptized by the Lord in the precious rain. And the lightning flashed across the sky, the thunder rumbled and rolled on by. I saw the fear in the devil's eyes that night, 'cause the Son of the Lord has come to save you. His life on a cross is what he gave you, offering salvation for your sins. Temptation can be an evil thing. It pulls your mind into its ring. It'll make a big strong man fall to his knees. But the Son of the Lord is stronger, I'll boast, and I'll put my faith in the Holy Ghost. It'll echo in my heart until I'm gone. Lightning flash across the sky, the thunder rumble and roll on by. You'll see the fear in the devil's eyes at night, 'cause the Son of the Lord has come to save you. His life on a cross is what he gave you, offering salvation for your sins. Listen to me close, my friend. Time is drawing near the end, and Jesus paid a price we could not afford. So I'll saddle up on a lightning bolt, ride shoulder to shoulder with the Holy Ghost, and I shall be a warrior for the Lord. And the lightning will flash across the sky, the thunder rumble and roll on by. You'll see the fear in the devil's eyes at night, 'cause the Son of the Lord has come to save us. His life on a cross is what he gave us, offering salvation for our sins.
So this week I am incredibly honoured to have with me wrestling legend, musician, and now promoter, Sam Houston. How are you doing today, sir?
Oh, I'm doing very well, thank you, man. And it's such a pleasure and honour to be here on your program, too. I've got a lot of things I'd like to talk about. You just let me know about which direction you want to go in, and we can head that way. First, though, I'd like to, you know, give my condolences. You know, it's an old... I guess, not wives' tale, but it's an old, I guess, custom, I guess, or an old thought that wrestlers die in threes. So we've had Johnny Valiant this week or last week.
Yeah.
Now Bruno Sammartino. And then we just learned of Paul Jones a little bit earlier today. My heart goes out to all the fans and everything like that. These were great men. You know, go ahead and mourn them a little, but honor their passing and rejoice, because they all lived good lives and they all brought joy to your, some of them might have ticked you off, but they all brought joy to your life. Paul Jones,
definitely. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's kind of, that was actually the first thing I was going to ask you about, because it's been just a crazy couple of weeks for losing some of the greatest names in wrestling history. And Paul Jones was in Mid-Atlantic when you were there as well. So did you?
Yes, sir.
Did you get to work with him much? Or
well, see, I'd known Paul Jones since I was a little kid. Mm-hmm. You know, my dad was Grizzly Smith, so we were on the road. You know, my dad and Uncle Luke, they were the Kentuckians.
Yeah.
So in the 60s and 70s, all my whole life was on the road. So in the 60s and 70s, anytime we were in the Carolinas, Paul Jones, Wahoo McDaniels, all those guys, Johnny Valentine, all those guys I already knew from like being a little kid. And then when I first got, in the ring, Paul was just getting out of the ring. He was becoming a manager, mm-hmm. you know.
And a great manager as well. Like.
Yeah, he was, you know. I didn't understand psychology at that time, you know, because I don't like managers going out there and just trying to, you know, get too involved or anything like that. It shouldn't be, you know, the match, the competition is the two guys in the ring,
mm-hmm.
you know, the manager shouldn't really get involved unless he really needs to get involved.
No, that's
you know,
true.
Don't take all the focus.
Yeah.
Don't take off all the focus off of that tight headlock that, you know, that the people are like really getting into. Don't take all the focus off of that by going over here and slapping the mat with a cane and hooping and, you know, let the people get involved in the match.
Mm-hmm. And then when
that's the beauty of the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
When
something happens to the manager, eventually, then it means something as well. Instead of I totally get it. And I mean, I could go on for a long time about how all of that's been, you know, kind of lost now.
It's all a lost art.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I'm so excited about the All Pro Wrestling League.
Yeah.
It's something I'm starting up. You know, I lost somebody very special to me last September,
mm-hmm.
and the boy would have been my stepson if I'd have. I was back a bad drinker back in the day, so I missed my wedding a couple of times.
I know it sounds funny, but I know it's not. But it just, yeah.
Well, you know, I don't know. Anyway, I miss. But I was this boy's father for the first 7 years of his life.
Mm.
You know, that's at a time that I didn't have my children because of my addiction to alcohol and everything. I was blessed to be in Bubba's life and Skyler's life.
Mm-hmm.
And he passed in a fiery car crash in September.
I'm very sorry to hear that.
I came up and trying to like help out. I mean, he was my boy.
Yeah.
And we started discussing putting a fundraiser together. So we decided on a Bennett's Wishes, a memorial event here in Whitesboro, Texas, my dad's hometown.
Yeah.
You know, it's not my hometown. I was born in Tampa, Florida, but I guess it's as much of a hometown as I've ever had. I lived in 21 places before I started first grade in school.
Wow.
So anyway, yeah, all over the country. So anyway, we were going to do a show in Whitesboro, Texas. The casino says, yes, we want to be involved. But then I come up here and they backed out. But during that time, a lady that I had helped a couple of years ago when WrestleMania was in Dallas, on my way up, the Red River had breached the levee and flooded out the river basin in northwest Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up on the night before WrestleCon, rescuing people out of with emergency services in a bass boat. Well, one of the ladies I rescued or helped with, her name was Teresa Massey.
Yeah.
And now she's a double amputee, breast cancer survivor. But there's no expiration on her head. But we're getting her a ramp built through Sam Houston. God's got a hold of me. Well, I went up to North Texas and got the high school gym. Now I've purchased the insurance for the event. I'm working on the rent payment. Everything is going well now. I talked to the high school coach, and the high school coach, they now have a wrestling team. Well, one of the coaches has a daughter that is 4 years old with leukemia, and she's undergoing chemotherapy. Mm-hmm. I went over and I met this family. So the benefit in Whitesboro, Texas, is May the 5th in Whitesboro, Texas. Doors open at 6:30. The event starts at 8. 100% of the ticket sales go to the families in need.
That's wonderful.
I've gone ahead. I've purchased. I now own the All Pro Wrestling League. It's going to be we're filed the 501c3 and everything. It's a not-for-profit business.
Yeah.
What I intend to do is train and teach some of the young guys, because the independent wrestling, the level of professionalism in the independent wrestling world today is horrible. You know, when your athletes show up to an event, you know, looking worse, looking horrible.
Yeah.
Looking like, you know, like they have no place to sleep, no home, you know, that's kind of, I remember, you know, people dressed well of themselves. You know, a champion was a champion in and out of the ring. You know, and that's just some of the protocol that I want to change. You know, being a wrestler used to be a great thing. Now on this independent circuit and everything, these guys don't understand. It needs to go back. Guys, first of all, wrestlers can't support themselves nowadays here in the States.
Yeah.
With just being a wrestler, because there are no territories, it's just the one. Therefore, all these secondary cities, all the cities around the country are actually starved for entertainment. You know, and if people could get together, a single promoter over here will have one town, one event, you know, and he'll do that every 2 months or something. He'll save himself $3,000 or whatever it'll cost him for a payroll. He'll say, and then he's a superstar for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It's nothing about having a well-oiled machine or a good organization anymore. That art is lost, you know, and there's a few people out there that know what they're doing. And I'm going to try to imply everything that I know to the betterment of professional wrestling. I mean, we've got so many promotions out there. Everybody gives pro wrestling a black eye. You know, I think sometimes I'm the only one that believes in it.
Well, I think as well, because like I do know a lot of wrestlers as well, and it's kind of, there are certainly some great names on the independent scene, but because putting on a show is, like, to whatever level is within everyone's budget and capability now, because anyone can get a ring,
yeah,
and anyone can get in that ring and not necessarily have the right level of training or ring gear or anything,
skills or anything. Yeah. Oh, I'm so, you know, I'm so tall. Oh, gosh, if I see another Undertaker wannabe, I mean, everybody wants to go out there. They want to be everybody wants to go there and be a Stone Cold ripoff or, yeah, an Undertaker ripoff, you know. It just gets old, you know. You know what I thought of the other day? What a good gimmick for somebody would be?
Gone.
To be a wrestler.
Imagine that.
You know, go out there in wrestling boots, knee pads maybe, trunks. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want a sporting jacket or something, wear a jacket, you know. But just go out there as, you know, a professional wrestler.
Yeah.
You know.
And again, so,
wow.
Yeah, it's almost like it's a, you know, like an epiphany that is.
Well, who are you gonna pay to see? Are you gonna pay to see Bruno Sammartino and Ole Anderson and brutes like Cowboy Bill Watts? You know, these guys over here. I'm guessing over there it was Black Angus. Well, Black Angus was over here too.
Mm-hmm.
But like Stephen Oy, he's a friend of mine. He was Steve Casey over here.
Yeah.
He's from over there. He's Black Angus's son. Do you know him?
I actually don't. But
oh,
I will check. I will.
Tell him if you do, tell him Sam Houston said hello. You know,
I will.
And then slap him in the face and run. No, I'm kidding. Don't run. No, No, I don't get in trouble. No, he was a good friend of mine over here in the States. When he came over here, I kind of helped him out and got him booked over for Watts and stuff. So
as a
real good guy.
As a kid growing up over here, we had WWF and WCW. That was it. Because we
I go way back before you.
Yeah. See, in the UK we had World of Sport, and there were guys like Big Daddy, Giant Haystacks, and Kendo Nagasaki and Cat Weasel and all that kind of stuff. And it was very. There was a lot of, I hate to use the word, but kind of a lot of pantomime and sort of, you know, not much action, but the crowd were really into it and they believed it as well. But at the same time, the UK during that time, produced Fit Finlay and, Dave Taylor and lots of wrestlers who went on to become trainers and made it in WWF, WWE as well, and WCW. So, like,
right. Well, Finlay and you just mentioned too, Dave and Finlay. Wow, two awesome guys. You know,
absolutely. So, are you with APWL? Are you taking? I guess it would be hard not to take a lot of your dad's knowledge as a promoter as well.
I've gone and taken care of all the legal work. I've got my release of indemnity forms for all the athletes. Mm-hmm. They're responsible for themselves. We're going back to the old days, the payoff system. Everybody will go back. You know, once it gets up and rolling right now, my top names, I have to give them a guarantee. And everybody will end up with a guarantee. It'll be, it'll be at least a $50 or $75 a night guarantee. Mm-hmm. I know over here in the States, a lot of these things, guys don't get anything.
Yeah.
You know? I want that to change. But mm-hmm. they need to be worth something, actually get something, too.
That's exactly it. And you're a great judge of talent as well from your family's history. You're in a unique position that you are, a veteran, and you also come from a great wrestling family. So, I would think that any wrestler worth their salt would put their trust in your opinion and would want to work hard for you. And,
I think they will. It's kind of like last year. I was down in Florida. I fell for this. One promoter, he promised me the moon, and it was all a pack of lies, only in the wrestling business, right?
you just have to
get down to Florida.
I get down
to Florida and I'm stuck there, but a lot of good things happened, and it happened with my Miracle in Motion, which I'll get into later. But this promoter, he promised a lot of things and he didn't pull through.
Yeah.
So with the All Pro Wrestling League, what I'm shooting for here, all the wrestling talent to get paid. But while I was down there, I went to Offa's, Offa and Sika, the Samoans. I went to WXWW, their training center.
Yeah.
And of course, I've known Offa since I was 8 years old.
Yeah.
So we get in there and we talk I was getting ready to start working for this other promoter, so I wanted some ring time. So it offered me to come down and train with the boys, And then before long, I worked out with him a time or two. And then he had a show coming up that weekend, and I asked to work on the show, and he put me on the show. Now, that first show, there was no advertising or anything. And when I got there, there was 79 people.
Mm.
Paid attendance. The third show I worked for him, because the next show that they advertised me, and people were going, oh, who is that? And then through Google and YouTube, I guess, but the third show that I worked, they had paid attendance of 503 people.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
The only thing different on the event was me.
You're a draw, man. People want to see. Like, do you find that the network and the WWE Encyclopedia, which I'm sure you've signed many of, do you think that they have really helped, like, introduce you to a new audience? Because you're all over that network.
I think they have. But I don't. I think what it is people overlook all that.
Mm-hmm.
And they wait till Google till they actually see it themselves, because I'm not having a whole lot of like, I was at WrestleMania the other day, or WrestleCon.
Yeah.
And I didn't have, but there was a whole lot of things going on. But I didn't have a whole lot of people coming over on our side of the WrestleCon. Everything else was going. It was so an incident in one side, and then, you know, it was a madhouse. Let's just say it like that.
I mean, did you see in person Harry Smith throw the coffee over Jake? Or
no, no, I didn't see that. I heard about it. And then I guess the story, more and more, the story unfolded, you know, and evidently, you know, he didn't like the comments that Jake made about his dad. Well, I mean, I understand he didn't like that. And I understand that. And you feel like you've got to, you know, do something.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like the part of, you know, the physical, you know, but, with my niece, or I don't know what all happened. I don't have all the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
I hope they can, you know, put things behind them, because I mean, that's the way, you know, it needs to be. The apologies need to be made or whatever. I don't know. I mean, that,
well, I guess
I just feel bad that it happened.
Changing the subject somewhat, you're the only person that I know who has had an out-of-body experience. What was that like? And did that set you on the path to religion, or were you already religious beforehand?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's all I can say. You know, I just, everything you could ever want, or everything was fulfilled. You know, I didn't see people or anything like that. I just felt, and then I felt the voice tell me that it wasn't my time, you know. And then the next thing I recall would be sitting in the CPR. I mean what do they call that?
I know what you mean.
When you're in a coma, that room, the
CPU. Anyway,
they never once asked them to leave. That room. They never. I can't even remember the name of the room. It's going to hit me in a few minutes. What an idiot I am. But anyway, intensive care. There we go.
Okay. ICU. Okay.
So I'm in an intensive care unit. I was in there for 2 weeks. The next thing's in the intensive care unit, I could see and hear everything going on around me. I felt myself sitting on the headboard, looking down at my own prone body, looking there and looking at my parents and my sister.
Yeah.
You know? I could see it, but I could not respond. I couldn't let them know anything. I couldn't get through to them. They never once in the 2 weeks, there's intensive care. You're only supposed to go in for 20 minutes every 2 hours. In 2 weeks' time, they never once asked my parents or my sister to leave the room. They would leave in shifts and go shower and come back. They would not leave the room.
Wow. That's incredible.
You know, then after 2 weeks, the doctor came in and told him he doesn't look good for me. And I saw my sister and my mom crying, and I kind of expected that. And I saw my dad crying.
Mm.
My dad's a big guy, you know. And when I saw him crying, I woke up that night at midnight. You know, I told mom. I told my mom. I said they nicked my pharynx. She said, "You mean?" I said, "No." They said pharynx.
Mm-hmm.
in the operating room. She went and looked that up, and she, you know, everybody knows your larynx is your voice box.
Yeah.
Your pharynx is the back of your windpipe. I'd never heard that word before, you know, so that's what happened to me, you know. And then, but, you know, at that time, if I had moved to the Lord then, I don't know what an incredible job I could have helped do, you know. But I was stuck on myself. I wanted the wrestling and everything. Now I've been blessed and I've been gifted, man. I've made a lot of money and I've blown a lot of money and I've lost a lot of money. You know, it's just that's how life is.
Yeah.
You know, but I've been blessed, man. I mean, how many people can say I opened up for the Who, Pete Townsend and the Who, at the world's biggest party in the whole state of Texas in the late 80s at the Houston Astrodome and Reunion Arena?
Oh, really? You know,
I did that.
That's incredible.
Yeah, I did that. You know, I was almost eaten twice, in New Guinea by cannibals.
See, that would make a great t-shirt.
I'm not... Yeah, yeah, twice, you know, Sam Houston, the other white me. Yeah.
So,
No, but I was signing autographs. No, I'm signing autographs.
Yeah.
And I'm in this little bitty ring. I had to go to the restroom and wanted a soda. These little bitty people, they're about 5'2", they pick me up over their head. They're little villagers. They wear like Tarzan loincloths. They've got bones in their noses and stuff like that, face paint. Oh, I'm not kidding. They're carrying spears, bows and arrows, and great big long knives. They were carrying me out. The Australian Army had to come get me. They were shooting people with rubber bullets. They were beating them with clubs, and these big, huge Rottweilers were dragging people off. And they get me in the Army transport, and the guy tells me he was a major or something. He tells me, he said, there was a big black pot in your future. And I said, what? And he told me, he said, they were going to cook me up and eat me so that my spirit lived through them.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. That was
so was this part of a wrestling tour, or was this just like a vacation? Or?
Oh, no. We went over there on tour to wrestle.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's a beautiful country, and that's where they filmed the Jurassic Park movies and Swiss Family Robinson and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it really was beautiful, but the heat, the humidity, everything else made it, it was rough. But it was a tropical paradise, I guess. You know, people lived in grass huts there. You could tell somebody if they had some remodeling done on their house, because if that wall would be gone with all the grass stuff, it would be replaced with beer boxes. You know?
The life of a wrestler. See, that's the thing. Like, you can totally believe it. Like, that could only happen from, you know, an old school wrestler. You couldn't have that now.
Check this out. I'm standing in the ring. I got Killer Brooks in a headlock.
Uh-huh.
Okay, here's some commotion going on, but I don't know what it is. I hear, bah, shh, bah, shh, you know, almost like simultaneously. I go to tag out, and AJ tells me, no, stay in there, my partner.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, man, I've been in here a while now. I said, let me catch my breath. And he goes, no, stay in there. And I turn around and look, and he's got one foot on one side of the ring apron and 1 foot on the other side of the post of him. And he's got his fingers interlocked, and he's hiding behind the ring post. And he goes, Sam, they're shooting. He said, stay in there. You're a smaller target. And the natives had busted down over 100 yards of wrought iron fencing around the soccer arena and were storming the arena. They stole the box office money, the whole 9 yards that night.
Yeah.
Anyway, they stormed the arena, and here comes the Australian Army, and they're, you know, shooting them and everything else. I let the headlock go, and I dove up underneath the ring. And I'm sitting there for a couple of minutes, and then finally Larry O'Day drops down, and he looks under. He was the referee. He looked, what are you doing? I told him, I said, it's a lot safer under here than it is out there.
So
everybody,
like,
how everybody else figured out I was pretty good, and they all hit up underneath the ring, too. We waited about 15 minutes and then got out.
So when things like that would happen, how many times have you, like, quit the wrestling business and then sort of, like, you know, come back the next day after having, like, a good
sleep? Oh, no. That's part of the stuff that you live for, you know? That's one, just one more thing I can notch in my saddlebags, you know?
Uh-huh.
Oh. I've done, you know, oh gosh, there's been so much.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Well, I was, okay, wait. Okay. Here's one. Okay, do you know who Dick Byer is?
Yes, I do.
The Destroyer,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, way back in the 60s, there were three different fellas, and they had wrestling bears,
mm-hmm.
and they traveled the country. You know, and the there was Tuffy Truesdale and Nick Adams, and I don't recall the other fellow's name.
Mm.
Well, anyway, so they were sort of in competition with each other. Well, Tuffy Truesdale had gone through Florida and had seen the Seminole Indian alligator wrestling.
Alligator, right? Wow, okay, right.
Right.
In a ring.
So he gets him an alligator. And now, one up the other two bear guys, you know, all they got's a bear. Well, yeah. He's got a bear or an alligator, so he's going to get more bookings, you know?
Yeah.
So he's booked up in Vancouver, which is, in our continent, is the top left side of the continent.
Hmm.
And he's got to make it from Vancouver to Maine, which is on the top right-hand side.
Hmm.
He's got to make it across country in 2 days because he's booked over there. It's winter, you know.
Yeah,
so he was traveling across to Maine. Now the Destroyer, Dick Byer, is going to wrestle the alligator. My dad, my Uncle Luke were another special attraction, the Kentuckians. My dad was 7 foot tall, 400 pounds, you know.
Yeah.
So they're going to wrestle. Well, the Coliseum, the promoter is so happy. He hasn't had a box office like this ever. You know, this is record breaking. Nobody's ever seen alligator wrestling anything.
No.
So the matches are going on. So finally Tuffy gets up and he's getting ready to go check the alligator. And he comes back to the
check the alligator for foreign objects and stuff like that. Oh.
No, just to check on. See, he carried him in a steel box.
Mm-hmm.
Well, going across from Vancouver to Bangor, Maine, the alligator froze to death.
Jeez, okay.
Okay, there's like 17,000 people in attendance,
uh-huh.
You know?
So how did he get around it?
He comes in the dressing room and he tells him the alligator is dead. This promoter's heart dropped. You could tell. I mean, everything just dropped. All he could see was him having to give all that money back.
Yeah.
Here's what they did. They carried the gator box out to the ring like a casket. You know, six guys. And they put my dad and my Uncle Luke, the Kentuckians, on the very back end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And when they walk it out to the ring, when they go and they open the lid on the thing, my uncle and my dad raise their arms up so the box is like a slide. The gator shoots out of the slide. Dick Byer jumped on a dead alligator, wiggled its legs. Grabbed it in the front of it, opened its mouth real slow, closed its mouth real slow, turned it over and pinned it 1, 2, 3, and then scurried it back up in the box. The people went absolutely crazy. But I was there. I was a little kid and Dick Byer wrestled dead alligator.
See, now that's entertainment. You couldn't get that now.
Yeah, I see him in Vegas every year.
Yeah.
And we talk about it. And see, another thing, I got the privilege of when I was just breaking in, being able to work with Dick Byer in the ring. And I said, I went to him when I got out of prison. I said, hey, do you remember me? He said, yeah, you're that kid that don't know the difference between a slap and a slam. He kept telling me, slap me. I slammed him 12 times that night.
Well, you can't hear it over the roar of the crowd, you know. And
it was great. Finally, he said, he's standing there in front of me. I said, slap me. And boy, I just hauled off and knocked the fire out of him, too.
Oh, well, to completely 180, because when you were talking about leaving Global to go to the WWF, did Terry Taylor go with you, or did he go?
No, he followed. Crockett had bought out Bill Watts. And when, that I got there, after I got there, that's when Duggan came in, Big Boss came in. This was talent that Bill Watts had and was supposed to be going to do something with Crockett. But what Crockett wanted to do, Crockett was just interested in a couple of pieces of talent. And he basically, he let that whole territory, he just let it go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he milked it into got one star or two or three stars out of it. It was Sting, but he took that and he farmed that over to WCW, and then UWF was no longer existence. All he did was basically pay Bill Watts enough money to say, don't get involved no more.
It does seem like WCW didn't take advantage of the Global sale as well as they could have. And incorporate it, or have an invasion, or like something like that, or
you don't even have to do all that stuff. What if you just run a legitimate deal? That would catch people, and what would be neat is if people said, hey man, this is really happening.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is really like it says. This isn't a whole bunch of hype, all this SmackDown, all that is drama.
Mm-hmm.
It's pre-produced drama. They already know which guy's going on what TV show, when he's going to do it. They know where you're going to be 3 months ahead of time. That's part of the magic with the whole how Vince made his money.
True.
Do
you think Bill?
Listen to this, okay?
Okay.
If I'm gonna make a lot of money, I've got my wrestling business. I have my core. Okay, so what does my core need? Well, the first thing Vince McMahon did, one of the first things he did, was he bought Andre's travel agency, Man Travel. Well, okay, so now he's booking Andre, and now he's booking all his guys. He wants to go nationwide first.
Yeah.
So he goes nationwide, and he knows where all these guys are going to be. He's running three towns a night. He knows where all these guys are going to be 3 months ahead of time. Yeah, there's an occasion when things have to get changed, but not usually.
Mm-hmm.
But what he's doing is he's buying those Super Saver tickets, those Super Saver fares, getting us on those Super, But that night of the event, instead of charging Super Saver fare, he's charging himself because he owns a travel agency. So the travel agency is pulling Y fare ticket prices.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
Off of the box office. And then that's less money that he has to pay the boys out of. So you figure $24,000, $25,000 a night that he's charging off in travel that he doesn't have to pay his talent on. He's really making a lot of money. And he's only spending maybe $1,600, $1,800, $2,500, and he's pocketing the other $2,200,
Oh,
it's all in how you do things.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
it's called creative financing.
Well, it's one of those things you don't get that successful without stepping on a few toes, I guess,
That's like the T-shirts and everything. Well, let's start our own thing, and then we have to license it ourselves and blah, 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 and you've got to pay so many fees. That's why by the time you buy a Steve Austin T-shirt, he probably gets, one-tenth of a penny off of that one shirt.
Well, look at the network now. They show live pay-per-views. They don't have to pay pay-per-view companies or anything like that. They get the... Okay, it's $9.99 a month, but they get all of that instead of just a percentage of, say, $50.
Right.
I've everything's kind of in house now, and you know, I wouldn't.
Well, that was Shane McMahon's dream way back when he was a referee when I was wrestling down there for him. I asked him what he wanted to do with the company, and he wanted to create a network.
Oh wow! Okay. You
know? And this was when he was refereeing.
He seemed like from stories because he ran the website for a long time and wanted to create online content and stuff like that. So he by the looks of it was very forward thinking. Maybe even compared to, you know, his dad and stuff like that. Maybe it's a generational thing or whatever. But do you think Bill Watts? This kind of a 2-part question. Do you think Bill Watts made a mistake trying to go national with Universal? Oh, well, I guess any of them, like apart from WWF, like because it would have been too hard to compete.
Well, no, I think Watt. Well, actually, Crockett was doing well for a while.
That's true. That's true.
You know, Watts was going. You know, here's okay. Like Crockett had whenever we had the Central States NWA, and then now Crockett couldn't draw more than, you know, $3,200 in Kansas City, but he was running that Memorial Hall. It's a building in the middle of the projects, in the middle of the bad neighborhoods. You got to park your car 2 blocks away and walk with your family here. You know, there's enough for like 7 cars there. That's, you know, that's your talent. And that's it, you know. First of all, I don't want to take on a Friday night my family through the worst area of town to wrestle a bit, you know. But the most he ever did was about $3,200. Now, the first time I went into Kansas City with Bill Watts, and I went in there against Eddie Gilbert on top, we drew $155,000.
Wow.
So it was exactly as I told Jim Crockett. It was the building and the area. I said, people know who we are.
Yeah.
Everywhere we go, they know who we are. They just don't know we're wrestling in their town because nobody goes out and gets the advertising done. And that was the whole big problem with that office.
When you moved from Universal to the WWF, was it frustrating that your experience and, you know, who Sam Houston has always been, that kind of gets forgotten when you join the WWF? It just doesn't get mentioned, sort of thing. Did you feel like you were starting again?
Not for me. I mean, maybe other people might look at it like that, but I always keep moving forward. And when I get knocked down, I keep getting back up. So, I mean, it wasn't reinventing or it wasn't redoing myself or anything like that. I mean, certainly up there, they didn't do me any favors.
They promised
a lot of things. Okay. They promised a lot of things and didn't hold up to nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like I'll never forget. Whoa, Vince telling me, oh, we ask you to gain weight, and even though you don't like the roids you got on them, you know?
Right.
You've done everything we've asked you to do here in the WWF. Now we're going to ask you to go home for 3 months, and we're going to bring you right back.
It's just... and
we're going to give you the dolls and the T-shirts and the whole nine yards.
Did even, like... Because obviously you were getting great reactions and everything, so did that not make a difference because you didn't have the body that Vince wanted, sort of thing?
I'm not sure. You know, I was kind of cocky. I was out there. I was still trying to prove, you know, prove who I was. That I was still a big dog, you know, no matter what. Even though you had all this hierarchy and, you know, you got to bow before this one and that one, the other one, I didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I showed the best that I could hang with the best. You know, I wasn't second best at anything I ever did.
Oh, absolutely. You
know, when Flair would order 50 kamikazes and 50 Coors Lights, Sam Houston wouldn't. I mean, I don't have a problem doing the same and standing there drinking them all, too.
Yeah.
You know, because that's something that Dusty told me. He said, if you want to be one of the big dogs, you got to get off the porch.
Yeah.
Well, I made sure I got, and that's probably one of the things that probably, you know, held me or got me into my addiction so bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, when I first started, Hector Guerrero told me, he said, don't ever be second best because some of the guys were trying to rib me.
Yeah.
Well, before long, every one of those guys, Mike Davis, Mike Rotunda, they all started hollering, "Uncle, please don't rib us no more." Mm-hmm. I mean, when you walk in the dressing room and there's 50 prophylactics blown up with a helium balloon and they all have your picture on them on their faces.
So when people, when guys on the roster knew you were coming in, and there were people who you knew from different companies and everything, was there already a perception?
A camaraderie?
A perception of you from people who didn't know you, or the fact that you were Jake's brother and everything. Was it kind of...
A lot of people, when it first came in, they didn't know.
Right, okay.
You know, it wasn't privileged information. I mean, it was privileged information. A lot of guys, me and Jake, neither one of us ever hyped on us being brothers.
Mm-hmm. So, was it always just a genuine coincidence when you guys teamed up in the WWF then? It was just...
Once we were up there, now the office knew that we were brothers, and some of the guys, like Terry Garvin, Pat Patterson, some of those guys knew. Yeah. But as far as, you know, it wasn't well known before I got there, but then it was never portrayed to the fans that way.
Mm-hmm.
And a few little things that we did together, you know, like the one in, Niagara Falls, that was just a bad thing. The guys had been messing with the snake inside the bag in the dressing room. When Jake went to go throw the snake out, I believe it was on Ron Bass. It was either Ron Bass or Nikolai Volkoff.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, when Jake threw the snake out, the snake bit the heel, turned around, hit Jake underneath the armpit and then on the forearm. And then on the forearm and rolled out to the ring. Guys were kicking it in the bag and everything else back in the dressing room, I heard.
Good.
So I'm standing there with Strongbow, and the snake rolled out of the ring and now is on the floor, circling the ring between the ring and the security railing. And Damien was a big snake.
Yeah.
You know? So he's standing up about, you know, 6.5 feet in the air, swiggling around, going around the ring. And the people on the front row think it's part of some stupid show.
Right.
And they're reaching over and they're smacking that snake in the back of the head, just high-fiving the crap out of it.
Uh-huh.
Well, Damien's swinging his head around, so Chief J. Strongbow goes, "Dancing Sam," he said, "you need to go out there and help your brother with that snake." And told him, I said, "Chief, that's his snake, not mine." He said, "Dancing Sam." He goes, "Man, this situation," he goes, "you need to get out there and help your brother with that snake." I said, "Chief, that snake's his, not mine."
Yeah.
He said, "Dancing Sam, if you want to wake up in the morning, still employed with the WWF, you'll go get that snake." Boy, here I go, rip my shirt off and run to the ring,
uh-huh.
Throw my shirt over the snake's head, dive on him. When I could take Damien down, I had me wrapped up tight, and Jake pulled him off of me just as I was passing out.
Oh, wow. So something that a guy who you mentioned who, like, I guess doesn't really get talked about at all, and I discovered him through the network as well, Johnny Canine. And he had such a good look about him as well. Like, were you surprised that he never made it further in the WWF than he did?
Not really. I'll be honest with you. He had a good look and everything, but he was a little small,
mm-hmm.
and he didn't have the mind for this business.
Mm-hmm. But it seemed like he was
sort of out there. Yeah. I mean, even when you're trying to do business with him, he was out there.
Well, he seemed like he was, like, just because of the look and the fact that he was on TV a lot more than a lot of the enhancement talent who were kind of there to just lose. Did Vince?
I know what you're saying.
Was he given a chance? Like, was it kind of like, we see something in you, we want to try and do something with you, see how it goes, sort of thing?
No, I mean, back then, the guy. That was a changing era for those guys then, too. You had Tony Gurria and Rene Goulet and everybody. These are your road agents now, you know, back there. And, you're just this and that and the other. You're never going to amount to nothing. You'll always be the best. It's just not giving the guy a chance.
Yeah.
you know. And it's not giving a guy a chance. It's not giving him a chance to excel. Yeah. You know, when you go out there and a road agent goes and tells a guy not to go off his feet for you, and you can't go out there and have a match with that guy, then you're taking everything away.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I totally understand. I don't want to just like focus on the WWF because you've done so much, but there's just some really intriguing things that kind of happened. You teamed up with Ted DiBiase in the WWF when he had just come in as a face, and he turned on
you. Yeah, he turned on me. I'm the guy he turned on.
And that was taped, but I don't know. Was it shown on TV? Because I've never seen it. I'm very intrigued by it.
I don't know if it was or not. I thought it was. It might have been shown on the Houston wrestling show.
Yeah.
Because Paul Bosch had his own Houston wrestling show.
Were you on the Paul Bosch retirement show that happened?
But I think I was.
Yeah.
I believe I was there, yeah.
That was the show that Duggan got hired back after being fired after the Sheik thing.
Right after the Sheik thing. I was there, yes, I was there.
Yeah. So did you find
Teddy? Oh gosh, I got to tell you. I mean, Teddy to me. I mean, I always Teddy was always world champion. But you know, Teddy was a great guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his work was great and convincing. You know, and his kid, Ted Jr.
Yeah,
is awesome. Actually, his older son Michael was a good worker too.
Oh really?
You know, too bad he hit some pitfalls in his life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can pray for him, and I certainly do. He's a good kid. But Ted, I remember a couple of tag team matches. One that was aired, it was Ted DiBiase and myself against Terry Taylor and Gentleman Chris Adams.
Mm-hmm.
What an amazing! It was about a 10-minute match on television. It was a great match.
Wow, I didn't know Chris Adams had...
saw wrestling skill.
Yeah,
look that one up.
Yeah, I would love to find. I didn't know Chris Adams had WWF matches as well.
No, not WWF, UWF.
Oh, UWF match. Yeah, I'm really hoping that more UWF footage surfaces as well, because from what I've seen of it, it looks great. And again, yeah, anything by Bill Watts. Like, there are Mid-South DVDs collections because I think his wife maybe owned the footage for the longest time. And
right, then, yeah. Whenever the split up happened and everything, she got everything.
Yeah.
So she owns all the rights to everything.
And she brought out some great DVDs. They may have sold. I think they sold to the WWF or WWE since then.
Probably. Yeah. Well, I mean, hey, wouldn't you? I mean, shoot, Kevin Von Erich got $3 million, probably $100,000 every year for the rest of his life.
Oh wow. Okay, that's a pretty good deal.
Yeah. So it makes a good deal. I know. Cowboy Johnny Mantell with the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. He's holding on to something.
Mm-hmm.
Over in Wichita Falls.
I think
those tapes will someday surface, and then somebody will get some just due out of that as well.
They certainly will. Danny Davis, I interviewed Dangerous Danny Davis a couple of weeks ago because he has a great new book out. And he asked me to ask you if you think that Dangerous Danny Davis can still whip your butt.
Oh, you know what? I'll get on my knees and let him try. I saw him the other day, and I kind of wanted to say, do you get shorter as you get older? You know, nah. Danny's a. I look forward to anything he wants to try to do,
mm-hmm.
And then I just make him cry like a little girl.
Yeah, Danny.
Hey man, you got to remember. I can go D-dorm on you now. I've been in prison. I survived maximum security, and I can go all the way. I'm gonna give it all to two things: God and wrestling, because some of the situations I found myself in, I knew I was, if I went down, I wasn't getting back up. So my prayers went to God, and I relied on my wrestling skills and abilities.
So did you ever, because you're wrestling at this at the APWL show, your main eventing,
yes,
against Kojak Sly, and is this you coming out of retirement then? Or did you
come? Well, after the floods 2 years ago,
yeah,
I was in Louisiana, lost everything in the floods, but I had my wrestling gear in the back of my truck. I had been coming back from Texas when it flooded out that night.
Wow.
And I couldn't get to my thing. So when I got to my things, everything was gone. But I had my wrestling gear. Well, my brother offered me a place to spend the, you know, get on my feet.
Hmm.
So I drove up to Vegas, and I was there. He was on the road, so I had to try to make, you know, some money. So I trained a couple of guys out there.
Yeah.
You know, one of the wrestling gyms. And, you know, but my parole officer was calling me back. I had no place to live. So I went through, when I got through Georgia, I had helped a disabled veteran. Well, a disabled veteran asked me for autographs.
Yeah.
And I drove out of my way and took him autographs about 4 or 5 months earlier. Well, he had started trying to put together a social media thing and YouTube.
Yeah.
And stuff for me. And so I went there, and he, we visited for a little while. He helped me do a couple of things for YouTube. And on my Facebook, because I'm not computer savvy.
Mm.
So anyway, he wanted to go to a Southern Fried Championship wrestling show. It was about an hour from his house. But, you know, he was on a limited income, and he doesn't, you know. So I figured if I go, I talk to the promoter, he'll let us come in. So I went and I talked to the promoter. He let us come in. We're sitting there watching the show. And none of the guys knew I was there or anything. The promoter was the only one that knew who I was. And I got that look. I guess people kind of recognized it. I didn't have my hat or anything like that with me. I just, you know, out there. So anyway, the guy in the match took a bad fall over the top rope and came right down. And it looked like he come right down on his kidney.
Okay.
And I heard the sound when his body hit the ring apron right on the edge.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew he wasn't getting up. So I threw Jamie, the veteran, I threw him my phone and my wallet. And I took off running up there. You'll find I'm that guy that takes off running to trouble, not away.
Yeah.
So anyway, I took off running up there, and I'm trying to talk to the guy. I know he's hurt. You know, so I'm hollering back in the back. Well, the guys back there don't know who I am. So I start screaming and hollering, and finally two guys come running out, and the referee, he looks over at me, and he's lost.
Hmm.
You know, so I'm figuring, oh, okay, well, this guy must be involved in the finish, blah, blah, or whatever.
Yeah.
So the referee's looking at me, lost, he don't know what to do. So I just hollered out real loud. I said, I got this. Jumped up on the apron, took the watch off, peeled the shirt off, told the guy in the ring to tag me. He did. I jumped in the ring, made a comeback on everybody, and bulldogged the guy. After I bulldogged the guy, that's when everybody was taking a knee for the national anthem. I grabbed the microphone. I said a few words. I thank God. I told him I talked to Jesus, and I stand for the flag and bow for the cross.
Mm-hmm.
And the people went crazy. Jamie had filmed that and put it straight up on my YouTube channel. And then 2 days later, I got a call to be in Shelby, North Carolina, and that's what kind of got me back on the road.
That's incredible. And how's everything holding up? The knees, the back, the neck, everything okay?
Well, you know, dude, okay, you know, it's like I say, you know, wrestling has taught me when you get knocked down, when you get knocked on your back, you go to your belly. When you get to your belly, you go to your hands and knees. When you go to your hands and knees, you go from there to your knees, and then you get up and go.
Yeah.
And that's why I hurt. I hurt every day of my life. But hey, I'm alive. I'm rejuvenated, and I got something better in my life. And you know, when it's all said and done, I'm going to a great place.
That's wonderful. And the Sam Houston God's Got a Hold on Me. We talked about it, but Teresa Massey. I found her project or her GoFundMe through your page, and I was more like I was honored to help in a small way, and I hope it, you know, yeah, she was so appreciative of it. We sent a few messages back and forth.
Oh, yeah, you know, and we didn't, that money did not build the ramp. What that did repair 16 burst pipes, get her a water heater, and then make repairs to a room, because when I got there, I was short $2,500 for materials to build her a ramp.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I went to Habitat for Humanity. I took that in. They wouldn't even open the door and give me the application.
Oh, really?
They handed me the application through the closed door. I took it home. I prayed with Teresa. We took it back the next day. I took Teresa with me. I played the video for him. The lady cried. She told me, she said, "You are a beautiful man." She said, "This is our highest priority." And so she'll have her ramp as soon as the water's received.
That's wonderful. And for everything that she's been through as well, like to survive cancer, like, you know, my mom passed away last year with cancer. So anyone that has survived it, like the strength firsthand, the strength that it takes to be able to want to carry on as well.
Right.
You know,
well, I want people to understand, okay, we have been drowned with so much misinformation, with so much deception from companies, from pharmaceutical companies, from, you know, from governments, everything. I'm tired of the scam no anymore. And I think it's time that everybody said, damn it, I'm tired. You know, let's get up here and let's do this right. Okay, this is the stuff that's bad for you. You know, they're like aspartame. It leads to Alzheimer's. Why are they allowing it in diet sodas so they can sell more medications for Alzheimer's?
Yeah.
You know, it's all, oh, gosh, it just ticks me off. Okay, for cancer research, I found this a year and a half ago. I told a lady about it. Now, I'm not going to say it cured her or anything like that. All I can say is that her tumor in her colon went into remission. Mm-hmm. She started drinking lemon water. She started, it was a thing I saw on Facebook on the internet. You take 6 lemons, you bring water to a boil, you boil lemons for 3 minutes, you take the lemons out with all the pulp out, you take that water, you put 2 heaping tablespoons of sourwood honey. Sourwood honey is made by the bees in Brazil and in Georgia here in the United States. It's a cancer killing honey. I don't know what agent it has in it, but it isolates its cancer cells and kills them off. The lemon water, that elevates your body's immune system. It elevates your body's white blood cell count. I told a lady in Florida, she was a disc jockey, a disc jockey's wife. I told her about that. In 5 weeks, her tumor had shrunk 2 millimeters.
Wow. I have a friend out in California who is a doctor, but he doesn't prescribe any man-made pharmaceuticals, I guess. Chemical based. And he, like, I had a minor thing. I had a sinus problem, and it's horrible when you're on a plane and you have a sinus problem and it starts to land, and then you get the cabin pressure and you feel like your head's about to explode. That happens to me all the time. And he gave me this spray that was entirely natural, and he was like, right, I'm going to add something to it as well. And I don't know what he added, but it's, again, completely natural ingredients, and it completely cleared it. And it's just, I totally believe in the body's ability to...
The body can heal itself.
Yeah, it can heal itself.
Okay.
Yeah.
we lose so much because we gave all this knowledge away.
Mm.
You know? You don't know what plants to use for what. Did you know that if you have infections, do you know that seawater is one of the best things for infections on the outside?
Really?
Your skin?
I did not know that.
Huh? Seawater. It's salt water, saline solution. Mm-hmm. It's natural saline, you know?
Thank you, Sam Houston. Part 2 coming very soon on bbgwrestling.com.